Alejandro Perez, who will talk about no firewalls and quantum gravity.
Okay, thank you very much. Can you hear me well?
Yes, we can hear you well.
Okay. So, start. So in this talk, I would like to present a possible scenario for the treatment of for the dealing with the problem of the information loss in the context of black hole evaporation. This scenario is largely based on a paradigm that was introduced some time ago by Ashtigar and Voywald as far as the structure, the causal structure of an effective space-time is concerned. And there is a new ingredient which has to do with an emphasis on the underlying discreteness of quantum gravity as a key concept that might help solving the issue of information in black hole evaporation. So we can go to the slide number one, next slide. So the as I said, the idea is to present a possible perspective on the problem of the information loss, which avoids some of the difficulties that have been discussed recently in the literature, such as the firewall problem. And that, I will argue, in a certain sense, avoids also large quantum effects in regions of the space-time that we expect to be semi-classical. The meaning of that statement should become more clear as we go on with my talk. So let's go to slide number two, which is just an introductory slide. So we understand a lot of the laws of dynamics of black holes when black holes are in equilibrium. So stationary black holes are expected to be well approximated or well described by stationary solutions of Einstein-Maxwell equations, which are labeled by only a handful of parameters, their mass, angular momentum, and charge. And so considering small perturbations of these stationary or equilibrium states, one discovers these analogies with thermodynamics that go by the name of zero first. The second law, which is more general, the area Hawking area theorem, and the third law of black hole mechanics that you know well, so I don't need to go very much into detail. So let's go to slide number three. So black holes behave, the previous laws are all derived from natural energy conditions and the availability and the field equations of general relativity, Einstein's equations, and they become a factual. The relationship with thermodynamics becomes factual if one introduces quantum effects. So Hawking showed that if one considers the scattering of a vacuum of a test field that is initially in vacuum state in scry minus on a space-time that describes the gravitational collapse, which might be initially very dynamical, but is assumed to be well approximated by a stationary black hole solution close to I plus, mainly for very late observers. Then putting this field in an initial vacuum state, he showed that asymptotic observers in future non-infinity observe an afterglow of Hawking radiation at the given temperature, which is proportional to the surface gravity. So black holes are thermal objects. Now we go back to the laws of black hole mechanics, and from there we can infer that this black hole has a huge entropy, which is proportional to one-fourth of the area, which is given by one-fourth of the area in Planck units. And so that becomes a key question for quantum gravity, for approaches to quantum gravity. How can one calculate this entropy from first principle? And I'd like to refer to this problem as somehow the easy problem. Even though, so we can go to next slide. So in quantum gravity, how do we approach the problem of computing black hole entropy? Well, We know that at the Planckian level, geometry is atomistic. That space is represented by complicated polymer-like excitations given by weak states or combinations of network states, and the geometry is discrete at the Planck level. So if we go to next slide, number five, we also know that, or we expect, in a theory such as theory of quantum gravity, we expect the notion of smooth space-time to arise from to be an effective notion for low-energy observers. Namely, we expect it to arise as via coarse graining. So low-energy observers, which are sensitive to certain coarse graining scales, will not be sensitive to the Planckian details of this weave. And in this sense, semi-classical geometries or smooth geometries are to be regarded as emergent in theories such as quantum gravity. And this is the key idea. If we go to slide number six, this is the key idea behind the calculation of black hole entropy or the statistical mechanical account for black hole entropy in the quantum gravity. And as I said at the beginning, before, I consider this as the easy problem, even though the problem is not easy at all, and probably progress is still necessary in describing in a clear-cut way this calculation. We have understood lots of things concerning this calculation, and it is actually the fact that we regard the area of a macroscopic black hole as a macroscopic parameter, and that we use the coarse graining scale, what allows us to account for the entropy of the black hole in statistical mechanical terms. So the view I just emphasized before concerning the way in which smooth geometries should arise in quantum gravity or loop quantum gravity is the paradigm or is the perspective that is taken when computing black hole entropy in the framework. So we can go to slide number seven. So that I refer to that previous problem as the easy problem because the real hard problem is the dynamical problem. When black holes are not really close to equilibrium, when black holes are not very large in Planck units, then because of Hawking radiation, they should evaporate, and the curvature at the horizon of this black hole should grow, should become Planckian at some point, and then a full quantum gravity dynamical description is necessary. And that is the problem that is very hard to deal with at the present stage of, exactly at the present stage of development of the theory. But let's go to slide number eight. But that is precisely the context in which the puzzle of information loss arises. So here you see the space-time or the causal structure of the space-time corresponding to a black hole that evaporates completely. And on the right, you see the Penrose diagram of such a space-time. If you assume such a Penrose diagram, then you run into conflict with unitarity. And that was initially emphasized by Hawking in 76. So I will briefly review some of the possibilities that are available for understanding this information loss paradox. There is a nice review by Hossenfelder and Smalling where many details are available. So in the context of the Penrose diagram on the right, then you see that obviously, because of the causal structure, if you consider the evolution of fields or quantum fields and define a state at a given instant, let's say represented by the Cauchy surface sigma, then there is no way, as suggested by this causal structure, that you can capture all the information that is carried in at that instant in an instant sigma prime, for the simple reason that sigma prime, the domain of dependence of sigma prime, is not the whole of the space-time, for the simple reason that there is a black hole in the space-time. So the existence of black holes and the subsequent evaporation, if it takes place in a global causal structure of the form that you see on the right of slide 8, then implies that, seems to imply that information should be lost, or there cannot be a unitary evolution between states on instance sigma to states on instance sigma prime. So just to make some statements about the picture, so you see the black hole horizon there, and then the dotted line that you see there represents the dynamical horizon, which is space-like at the beginning because the black hole is being created by the accretion of material that is not represented in my diagram, and becomes time. It becomes for a while sort of now because the black hole is assumed to be large and semi-classical, and Hawking radiation is the back reaction of Hawking radiation is not important, and then becomes time-like until the end of the operation. The green little curvy lines represent Hawking radiation. There is some uncertainty about what happens very close to the last moment when the black hole becomes Planckian in size, of course, because at that retarded time, seen from future null infinity, quantum gravity effect that cannot be accounted for in terms of semi-classical arguments must be important. So let's go to slide number 9. So a possibility for understanding this apparent puzzle of information loss is that information about the initial state of the universe at instant sigma is just falls into the black hole, into the singularity. The singularity is replaced by something else in terms of a fundamental theory that replaces the relativity, and that the information just remains there in some ways. And I like to refer to this as the baby universe possibility. And of course, there is nothing logically wrong with such a view. This is like doing experiments with electrons in quantum mechanics on a table that has a hole, so the electron can fall through the hole and disappear from my spacetime into the two-dimensional table. So I'm not going to discuss this possibility more. I'm going to, even though some of the things I will say would be relevant also, even if the causal structure of the spacetime is the one shown in this comparison. So let's go to slide number 10. Another proposal that is quite popular is that when the black hole becomes of the order of the Planck mass, then for some reason there is a remnant. The black hole does not completely evaporate, and that remnant is usually regarded as a point-like object with a particle which can be seen as a particle in effective field theory formulation. So there are various issues related to this kind of scenario. Either one believes that this remnant contains a huge amount of information, or that there are correlations that between the internal degrees of freedom of this remnant and the Hawking radiation, so that the final state, if we started from a pure state, that final state is also pure, and that that these correlations remain forever, and that the remnant is stable, and that information never comes out of the remnant. Such view of a stable remnant leads to conflicts if we interpret this as a fundamental particle because of the huge degeneracy of a huge amount of internal states of the remnant. It leads naturally to big probabilities of pair creation and conflicts with the standard particle theory. The other possibility is that the remnant slowly leaks out this information in terms of soft radiation. The radiation has to be soft because at the end of evaporation, this remnant has only a mass of the order of the Planck mass. And so the amount of energy that is available in terms of energy conservation arguments from the point of view of observers at infinity is very small. So if I want to evacuate this information in terms of effective field theory degrees of freedom and in terms of waves, those waves need to carry very, very little energy. And so, so one can compute the lifetime of remnant, and it's essentially a huge number. And so the objections that are raised for stable remnants are also raised for this type of remnant. Okay, so we can go to slide number 11. So a third proposal is that somehow information is recovered before the end of the Hawking evaporation. And this is something that has to be pushed, that has been proposed by people like Page, Tuft, and Susskind. In the picture that you see on slide number 11 there on the right, this looks like a strong violation of causality. So in that causal structure, one would expect that there is information that falls into the singularity, and just because of the Lycon structure of the space-time, cannot go back to infinity because of the presence of the black hole, for example. Nevertheless, in such scenarios, one argues for some exotic quantum gravity effects that might allow for information to flow out, nevertheless. And the idea is that, so the analogy that is often drawn is that of a hot body, when a hot body cools down, so if a hot body, the cooling of a hot body, this is something that we believe is a unitary process, that we can describe this by an initially pure state, and that ends up being a pure state for later time. The way, despite of the fact that at individual instances of time, I might have the impression that I am getting thermal radiation out of the hot body, this is only an illusion, because if I look carefully at this radiation, I should find correlations between the late radiation and the initial radiation, so that the final state, even though at individual instances of time, locally in time, might look thermal, if I consider the whole evaporation process, then the final state should be purified by this. Hidden by these correlations, which are not hidden but are hard to detect, between late radiation and early radiation. So the picture here is more or less the same. So one assumes that somehow the Hawking radiation that is emitted late must be correlated in some ways with the Hawking radiation that was emitted earlier. That's the meaning of the picture on the left, and the picture on the right is just the same thing, but in terms of the Penrose diagram. So this picture is problematic, so we can go to next slide. So inconsistencies with these pictures have been pointed out recently by the people you see here. And has led to the notion of firewalls. So the idea is that if one assumes that during early stages of evaporation of the black hole, namely when the black hole is very large and the horizon, the curvature of the horizon is small, if one assumes that the quantum state describing the situation is a Hadamard state, namely a state such that for freely falling observers crossing the horizon, the state looks at short scales in a way that is indistinguishable from the vacuum state, then the state being the Hadamard state, or namely looking like the vacuum for freely falling observers crossing at the horizon, implies a certain type of correlation between pairs. So if we represent the Hawking radiation by the cartoon that you see on the left, then the quantum state being Hadamard at the horizon implies that pair creation of particles B and C, for instance, B is going to escape to infinity to be part of Hawking radiation, and B is the mode that falls into the singularity. These particles must be maximally correlated. Now, if I want that C is be correlated with some early particle emitted, earlier particle, particle A on the left, then just the laws of quantum mechanics tell me that I cannot have, if I have some correlations between C and A, then the correlations between C and B cannot be maximal, cannot be those of Hadamard state, cannot be those of a state that looks like the vacuum for freely falling observers. So therefore, if I want this type of correlations to save my problem of information and to purify the state, the correlations between late and early radiations, then I have to have departures for the vacuum state for, at horizon, while crossing the horizon. And these deviations become very important as I follow them back to the past and lead to a divergence of the, in particular, the expectation value of the energy momentum tensor, which is what is referred to as the firewall. So if I want the state for a very large black hole, where when the black hole is semi-classical, to look to be a Hadamard state, which is what is demanded to any state in quantum theory and curved space-time. So this is the consistency requirement to good states in the semi-classical regime. Then I cannot have any correlations that purify correlations between late and early radiations that might resolve the issue of information. So we can go to next slide, number 13. Other recent proposals, there are other proposals, which some of them are not so recent, and but they have the interest on them has been revived recently. And in a sense, these proposals are related to what I want to talk about today. So namely, we know that due to quantum effects, the singularity, there shouldn't be any singularity, and we would refer to regions of space-time where curvature is Planckian to the would-be singularity from now on. The proposal number four is to say, okay, in quantum gravity, the causal structure of the space-time should not be like the ones we have been looking at so far. In fact, there is no singularity, and so we expect to have an effective space-time and the possibility to recover or purify we expect to have an initial phase where you see these arrows there who represent the semi-classical phase where we have a Hawking radiation escaping to infinity. That state might be perfectly thermal, and the purifying correlation that make the final state pure, if I started from a pure state, will come from information that flows across the would-be singularity and reach back infinity at later times later than PF. So I will have more things to say about this picture in a moment. So keep this in mind. So let's go to slide 14. The following discussion will be framed in the in space-time background that has features that have been introduced in the Astor-Gargoyle paradigm in 2003, I believe. 2003. So you see the space-time on the causal structure given by this Penrose diagram on the left. Let's explain what we see in that diagram. in its argue for the physical physical correctness of this marker of this space-time from the point of view of an observer at infinity. So here you see, starting from I minus, you see some shadow region that represents the matter inflow that will produce the black hole. You see the black hole horizon, which is sort of like the boundary of the shadow of. You see a darkened region, a darker region in the middle. This is the would-be singularity. So in classical terms, this is where the black hole singularity is to appear. And due to quantum effects, we expect that region to be replaced by something else. So that darkened region there is a region where either curvature is Planckian or quantum geometry fluctuations are very large, so that there is no space-time background geometry representation. Now, the shadow of this would-be singularity as a boundary, so one can still make sense of a black hole and a black hole horizon. If I, so usually the definition of black hole is based on the region that is left out of the past of future null infinity. So one can still generalize this definition by talking about the something like the semi-classical past of future null infinity. If I look at the past on future null infinity, namely if I look at all the points that can be connected to future null infinity by causal curve, then it seems that here this will involve the whole of the space-time. But if I define the path as being both points that are that can be connected by causal curves to future non-infinity without crossing the darkened region, then I still have a definition of a black hole. So the path as the ensemble of points which can be joined to future non-infinity by causal curves which do not enter the region where there are a high curvature effects or high or strong geometry, quantum geometry fluctuation, the quantum gravity region. So there you see the boundary of that region would represent the horizon. You see the dynamical horizon again here that is space, is the dotted line there that first is initially space-like due to the inflow of matter. And it becomes, for a little while now, at retarded time, U-naught, okay, on future null infinity. Then the black hole evaporates slowly. We assume, well, during this time, the black hole is very large inside the unit, and so we trust the semi-classical approximation that tells us that the black hole will radiate Hawking radiation very slowly. And so the horizon becomes time-like for a while until the black hole has radiated between U0 and U1, or before U1, has radiated most of its initial mass. The mass, the bonding mass at U0 has reduced to the order of the Planck mass. And then, well, something happens that has to be described by quantum gravity. But the point is that when we approach U1, most of the macroscopic mass, the whole of the macroscopic mass of the initial black hole, has gone to infinity in terms of Hawking radiation. So from there, from that point on, and assuming positivity of energy, or that there are no strong violations of energy conditions, then the space-time from U1 on cannot be anything else, I mean, in the neighborhood of future null infinity, cannot be anything else but flat Minkowski space-time, or very close to flat Minkowski space-time. So that's why, so in this paradigm, of the future, after long after U1, is well described, well approximated by space-time that is supposed to be semi-classical and flat, outside a region that would look like a naked singularity to future observers, to observers that are later than U1. But but it's not a naked singularity, it's a would-be singularity. It's a place where there are strong quantum effects, but outside a region whose precise form is something that we cannot really Here I am sort of, for historical reasons, I am taking the very same type of scenario as proposed by Ashikar and Bolyubov, where the boundary of this quantum region is again a space-like surface. But the details of this cartoon, of course, are things that might change. The form of this darkened region are things that have to be can only be understood if we have a full control of the quantum field. But the fact that the space-time is highly time asymmetric in this way, so initially around sigma 1, we have a circle, let's assume circle symmetry, just for the sake of our presentation, initially looks like a black hole space-time, slowly radiating until after U1, the space-time is essentially represented by Minkowski space-time, plus space-time. So this is the story that one can tell from the point of view of observers close to at infinity. And it's essentially based on the semi-classical assumption that Hawking radiation is physically the right way of describing the situation, and secondly, energy conservation. And from U1 on, there is no more energy left. The bonding mass goes to essentially zero, or the order of the Planck mass, and so the space-time is flat. Let's go to slide 15. So, of course, we need to avoid the firewall problem, and that is very easy to do. The firewall argument tell us is exactly that there cannot be correlations between future and early, late and early Hawking radiation. So there are no correlations between early and late radiation. And the state for freely falling observers crossing the horizon looks like is the Hadamard state, looks like the vacuum at short scale. So let's go to slide number 16. Now, it seems to me that unitarity imposes further restrictions on what can happen. So, of course, I mean, the view of this Ashikar Bolyubov paradigm was that this paradigm was presented as a way of understanding the information loss paradox, or how is it that an initially pure state can be purified at late time. And the idea is that the final state would be purified. So we just said that most of the mass, M0 being the initial mass of our black hole, look at the diagram on the right. Most of the mass, M0 minus the Planck mass, has been radiated in terms of Hawking radiation, which contains no correlation. So the final state will be pure if there are correlations between those Hawking quanta and something happening after the black hole, after the would-be singularity has become visible for asymptotic observers. Now, one view could be that after the black hole the would-be singularity becomes visible, then information is retrieved in terms of standard effective quantum field theory degrees of freedom. And it seems to me that there is a great deal of evidence that this can actually not be the case. And the reason is that it's very similar to it's energy conservation once again. The reason is that when the would-be singularity becomes visible to future null infinity, the remaining available energy is only of the order of the Planck mass. So if we want to recover information by correlations with particles that come after the time the would-be singularity becomes visible, then various calculations in particular of the kind that are driven by or a recent paper by Eugenio Bianchi, Tommaso Di Lorenzo and Matteo Smerlach, show that because of the strong kind asymmetry, to which I will come back in a moment, of the space-time, there is no way, if one keeps unitarity, at least in the approximation when one studies particle creation in the 2D model where one only concentrates on S-mode, one sees that because of this strong time asymmetry of the space-time, there will be a lot of energy radiated during the period where the Rubin singularity is visible. Energy that would not satisfy this constraint of being restricted by or bounded by something of the order of the Planck mass. So, of course, a possible solution is to abandon unitarity in the effective quantum field theory sense. Namely, one believes that quantum gravity at the fundamental level respects unitarity, is a quantum mechanical theory where information is preserved. But a possible solution is that what fails is the unitarity of the treatment of the degrees of freedom, the low energy degrees of freedom associated to the test field, mainly that is taken into account in the particle creation calculations of the paper that I'm citing here. So a possible solution is that low energy quantum field theory unitarity is broken, while the fundamental quantum gravity unitarity holds. So that, in other words, information can be retrieved during the time where the Rubin singularity becomes visible because of Planckian, because of entanglement between quantum geometry, Planckian degrees of freedom, and the early Hawking radiation. Quantum geometry, Planckian degrees of freedom, which are just of the same nature that we count when we describe black hole entropy in the context of the easy problem of the black holes in equilibrium. So let's go to slide number 17. So that slide is just to say that I want to remind you of on my previous slide, we have seen this one already, namely the smooth geometry at future man infinity, when we assume that the space-time becomes semi-classical at future man infinity after black hole evaporation, nothing prevents, I mean, we are, again, in the context of coarse graining, so we are saying that this geometry is semi-classical to low-energy observers that carry with them a coarse graining scale.
Question?
Yes.
Yes, Alejandro, the idea of the coarse grain in the weeds is just about the spatial geometry. When it comes to the space-time geometry, there should be a quantum state which minimizes the Hamiltonian and is the vacuum and corresponds to flat space-time. Don't you think that that should be a unique state? That the vacuum, the state that corresponds to the vacuum and corresponds to Minkowski space-time? Should be a unique quantum state, a unique superposition of the network state?
Yeah, thank you for the question. No, I mean, a key assumption that I'm making is that we still don't know exactly how to describe this state you're referring to in detail. But the key assumption I'm making is that there is a huge degeneracy associated to that physical state that describes, let's say, Minkowski semi-classical geometry. So I am saying that it is possible in a framework such as that of loop quantum gravity that might be the case.
No, I understand that's the assumption you're making, but that's where you want to hide the information. I understand that. But that would imply that quantum gravity is very different than other conventions, than other quantum field theories which have unique ground state.
I'm sorry, can you repeat this last statement? I did not hear you well.
almost an axiom of quantum field theory is that the ground state is unique. And there is somewhere in the background a Hamiltonian, which for this to be physical is bounded from below. And if you're positing a huge degeneracy corresponding to Minkowski space time, you're essentially positing that the ground state of the quantum gravity Hamiltonian is not unique.
That's right. So I am arguing that it is natural to expect that there are degrees of freedom in quantum gravity that do not weight, so that we can have defects in the space-time, in the state that represents the ground state, and that these defects are not accounted for in terms of energy. So that would be another way of saying it, so that you have a huge degeneracy of this ground state, which is defined by E equals zero energy.
Okay, good. I just wanted to get you to say that explicitly, because that's a radical assumption. You may be right, but I just wanted you to say it explicitly.
Yeah, that's the key assumption. Okay, so let's go to slide number 18. Before going to, let's go to slide number 18. So I want to say another thing. So a very important feature of the space-time background that I am considering that we have argued to be reasonable from the point of view of energy conservation and according to observers at infinity, is highly time asymmetric. So I want to argue that time asymmetry of gravitational collapse seems to be a clear feature of space-time representing gravitational collapse. And I want to argue that some recent models in which one tries to answer the question of unitarity or solve the issue of unitarity by models of space-time collapse that are time-symmetric are actually problematic. And that when one looks at the type of problems that one finds, one sees that the solution of these problems points towards going to a space-time picture that looks more like the one I just showed you before, where space-time is actually very time asymmetric. The future is very different from the past. And of course, the reason for that time asymmetry is not a mysterious reason. It's just something that can be traced back to the type of initial conditions that one finds, that one sets. So space-time looks time asymmetric when we start from initial conditions that represent a quantum state which is close to the vacuum state and some diluted concentration of matter somewhere that will end up generating a black hole. So these initial conditions are special, and this is why the space-time will look time asymmetric. But now, time-symmetric pictures are actually inconsistent with this type of initial conditions, as I will try to argue here. So first, look at the diagram on the left. This is just the standard space-time corresponding, the classical space-time corresponding to gravitational collapse. And one interesting property of this space-time is that if you put a vacuum state in the past, and you consider this a vacuum state of a test field in the past, well, we know what happens. In the future, observers will observe Hawking radiation. And that's, that kind of boundary condition is compatible with such a background space-time. However, if instead you decide to say that future observers at future non-infinity observe the state of the field, of the test field, in a vacuum plus here in this diagram, then you can show that such a state, when you evolve it back in time, it's not the Hadamard state. Indeed, the energy momentum tensor blows up at the horizon. So such boundary condition it generates a firewall again. Indeed, this is true for any state in the future, which is an eigenstate of a number of particles. So this tells you that such a background on the left is incompatible with arbitrary boundary conditions. So that background seems compatible only with boundary conditions where in the past you have essentially the vacuum state or something close to the vacuum state. So now we can go to the right. So similarly, in this time-symmetric space-time, the space-time at retarded time before the horizon, that you see the past horizon here, there is a word off written there that doesn't mean anything. I forgot to remove it. It was there for some other reason. So the space-time before the past horizon is essentially given by flat Minkowski space. So this represents the collapse of a shell of a given mass, M, that bounces back in this firewall scenario and end up at future non-infinity. Now, the space-time is flat in the path of the infalling shell, and it's just Schwarzschild space-time in the future, to the future of the infalling shell. For that reason, if I put in the future a vacuum state, and I try to look at particle creation, so I do semi-classics, I just imagine that I have a test field in the vacuum state in the future, then for the very same reason I find a firewall in the context of the space-time on the left, I will find the firewall on the past horizon in the picture on the right, in the left side of the picture on the right. Similarly, just by time symmetry, if I put, now look at the far right diagram, if I put the vacuum in these fireworks in the past, so if I think that I initially send this shell and that fields, test fields, are in the vacuum state for observers in the past, then one can, well, just by symmetry, argue that there will be a firewall or the divergence of the expectation value of the energy momentum tensor at the white hole horizon. So there will be a singularity. I mean, this suggests that there will be a singularity at the future horizon generated by the particles that are created in this background. And this singularity clearly breaks the time symmetry of the picture. So and suggests that the picture suggests that quantum effects would modify this time symmetric picture and make it more look like the space-time that we have been considering in the context of the Ashbaker Boyle paradigm. So something like that, I will mention something about this concerning some recent results by Gambini and Pooling on the quantum dynamics of shells towards the end of this, but which is relevant to the discussion here. So let's go to slide number 19. So we have been arguing for the space-time picture you see on the left in terms of physics, energy conservation, and the validity of the semi-classical approximation from the point of view of observers at infinity. So from the point of view of observers at infinity, we expect space-time to be, as we just explained, flat in the future and corresponding to a slowly evaporating black hole in the past. Now, of course, and this space-time is highly time asymmetric. Okay? So we just argue for this time asymmetry. So we think this is a genuine feature of gravitational collapse and has to do with the type of initial conditions that we give to describe the system. Now, one would like to understand this strong time asymmetry at the local level. Namely, if I look at the would-be singularity region, I see that from the past, I have this matter collapsing and density becoming huge, And to the future of the shaded region, I am saying the space-time should become flat, essentially flat, because of energy conservation argument. So there is a strong local time asymmetry around this would-be singularity. And of course, this is a feature that should be treated or understood only in terms of a full quantum dynamical description at the full quantum Planckian level. Despite of this, and despite of the fact that such a description is quite hard at present, I think we can say some things. Here on the right, you see the cartoon of the geometry of a space-like surface sigma. That imagine this space-like surface as being an evolution of sigma 1 on the left, approaching the would-be singularity until it touches this would-be singularity. Then the region where this sigma touches the would-be singularity would have a spike type of geometry, as you can work out from some model of black hole evaporation, such as in terms of Aedia space-time or something like that. Now, an instant of time later, sigma prime corresponds to the evolution back, so pushing back in time the instant sigma 2 on the left until it touches this would-be singularity. Sigma 2, at least the part that is after U1, should be in a space-like surface in Minkowski space-time, and so one would expect, at least in this picture, the space geometry of sigma prime to look to be like a plane, and this region where we touch the would-be singularity to correspond to a hyperdisk, at least here in this picture. So the local quantum gravity dynamics should explain how one passes from this spiky geometry to this flat slice on the other side. This is a strongly time asymmetric dynamical evolution that seems a little bit at odds with some of the results that we have concerning, for instance, quantum cosmology, where bounces, where the would-be singularities tend to be regions where geometry looks essentially same on to the future and to the past of the bouncing region. So I will have something to say about this in a moment. So can we say something about this local version of the dynamics? Ideally, we will need the full theory. Let's see what we can say with a little bit we know. So let's go to next slide. So we have said something already, and this asymmetry of the would-be singularity comes already from our argumentation in terms of energy conservation and the validity of the semi-classical Hawking radiation picture as seen from infinity. And some problems are very easy to deal with when one looks at things from infinity and become extremely hard when one looks at them locally. And so I just wanted to show you an example that I like very much. So if you look at a boat moving on a lake or in the sea, a regular boat would produce waves that go off to infinity. And so if I am an observer far away, I see these waves, I know they carry energy, and I conclude that whatever the source is, that source is spending a lot of energy in moving across the sea. So, and I might have the idea, as people have the idea, to modify the form of my ship to avoid or to minimize the generation of this radiation or of these waves. So the idea is to put a bulb in front of a ship, a bulb that will produce another wave, which will exactly cancel by interference the wave that you would produce if the bulb wouldn't be there, as you see there in this little diagram, so that now the ship that you see on the left upper corner moves across the sea, but it doesn't produce that wave, or it produces two waves that cancel each other. So from infinity, I see clearly that the second situation is more favorable and that ship has to spend much less energy to go through the medium. Now, of course, all these statements must have a local description in terms of molecules of the fluid And effectively, by just putting this ball in front of the ship, I have reduced the friction of this object in the water. So we are confronted with a similar situation here. For go to next slide. So we have argued for a global space-time causal structure from the point of view of what we expect from infinity. So that picture must be right, and within the context of the assumptions we've made, which are essentially the validity of the semi-classical approximation for large black hole energy conservation, that picture has to be right. Now, we should expect this strong time asymmetry of quantum gravity evolution across the would-be singularity for appropriate initial conditions, the ones that correspond to gravitational collapse. So let's go to slide number 22, and here in slide number 22, it's actually unfortunate, but one cannot say lots of things about the quantum dynamics with the I cannot say lots of things at the moment, so hopefully one can make these kind of things more precise in the future. But there are a few things that I can say that I think are important. So we are on slide 22, okay, just in case. So here on the left, you see a portion of the space-time close to the Goodby singularity, and I am representing a pair of particles created, particle A and B. Particle B will go off to infinity and carry energy that will be measured at infinity as Hawking radiation, and particle A falls into the singularity. Now, I am assuming that at the fundamental level there is a unitary evolution, so particle A goes through the would-be singularity and has to emerge as a has to survive as a degree of freedom that is correlated with particle B to the future of this would-be singularity. So I call this A bar. So A bar is essentially the particle, the field excitation that going through the would-be singularity has to be stripped off all of its energy content, because as we argued for infinity, from infinity on the to the future of sigma prime, space-time has to be basically flat. So A bar, which carries the information, the correlations with B, has to be something that carries no significant amount of energy, and it carries carries the correlations. And the viewpoint we have here, as the point of view, is that this is to become a bar is actually one of these defects in the space-time form to the future of the singularity. Now, that's a genuinely time asymmetric feature of evolution across this would-be singularity. A in the past is just an excitation of the field. To the future is something very different. It carries no energy. It's just a defect in the Planckian structure. And can we say something about this time asymmetry from the local perspective? And I think that one can say something, just a little bit. So if one considers the picture on the right, which corresponds to the gravitational collapse of the shell, so to the future of this red shell, the space-time is Schwarzschild space-time. To the past is Minkowski space-time. So one can, in a two-dimensional context, compute explicitly the energy momentum tensor, the expectation value of the energy momentum tensor on a state which is the so-called Unruh state, which is basically the vacuum state in the past. And if one does this computation, one finds something that is very natural. Well, first of all, there are negative, the expectation value of the component of T mu that corresponds, measured by freely falling observers in the interior of the black hole, is negative. It blows up at the horizon. Of course, this cannot be taken seriously because this is just semi-classical quantum gravity, and so we cannot trust this all the way through singularity. But I want to look at this expression just to give you an indication of something that to me is very important. And the important thing is that despite of the fact that to the future of the collapsing shell, the space-time is isometric to Schwarzschild, and that Schwarzschild has Killing fields, time translational Killing fields, namely time symmetric, the energy momentum tensor quantum effect implies that the energy momentum tensor inside is by no means time symmetric, time translationally invariant. I mean, this is surprising because the space-time globally is not time symmetric. The past is Minkowski, the future is Schwarzschild. But so time symmetry inside the black hole means that if you take an R equal to constant surface, usually, as you move along the d by dt or the Killing field d by dt inside, which is space-like, nothing really changes. And that is the reason why the interior of Schwarzschild space-time sometimes is modeled by Kenstanski and Sachs model. I hope you know what I mean. I just forgot to write it. So a homogeneous cosmology close to the singularity. Now we're seeing that quantum effects due to particle creation or vacuum polarization in the semiclassical regime imply that this homogeneity of an R equal constant surface is violated. You see here the expectation value of the energy measured by these freely falling observers depend on the retarded time U, which here is measured from the point of view, this retarded time U is the retarded time of Minkowski, is the Minkowski retarded time. So as U approaches zero, you get an additional very, very strong contribution. U equals zero in this diagram corresponds to the place where the shell meets the singularity. So the shaded region to the path of the singularity represents the region where the energy density is more negative than some constant. And you see that negative energy becomes more and more important as you approach the shell. So that means that contribution of the vacuum fluctuation of the field, at least in the semi-classical regime, points to a deviation from the symmetries of the space-time you begin with, of the background space-time that you have. So this is an indication of an effect that should be present in a formulation of the dynamics in terms of the full quantum gravity. So the point that I'm trying to make is that from the semi-classical calculation of expectation value of T mu, we see an indication that points to an accumulation of negative energy close to the place where positive energy crosses the singularity. So this negative energy is there to, I mean, if the picture of the Ashtekar-Boyevol space-time is correct, then we should have something, some effect that annihilates the positive energy that has produced the black hole in the first place, so that to the future there would be singularity, there is nothing left. Okay, so we can go to slide number 23. Now, can we say more about the geometry of this transition across the would-be singularity? So one thing that we can say is that, okay, we just explained how the Euclidean geometry of a time slice before the would-be singularity looks like, the sigma, and how a time slice right after the would-be singularity looks like. This is sigma prime. So the volume of sigma can be estimated using some model of an evaporating black hole. And so if you, and the volume turns out to be of the form, so the volume into the past, in which the volume of sigma, the volume of the shaded region mainly, the region that, find, that is inside the black hole, scales like mass, the initial mass of the black hole to the third, times the mass over the Planck length to some parameter alpha. And alpha, for instance, if you use a model, an advanced Bayesian space-time metric to describe evaporation, an evaporation that you assume to last m-cubed, a time that is of the order of m-cubed in Planck units, then you find that alpha is 5 hertz. So there is a huge volume in sigma. And this result is completely compatible with some definitions of volume of the interior of the black hole that have been studied by Rovelli and Pistorulli. So this is just a special case. So one has a huge volume for sigma. So can we estimate some geometric property of sigma prime? And what I want to say, if you go to next slide, number 24, is that, so here on the left, you see a space-time picture of the final stage of evaporation. The black hole shrinks, and suddenly this looping singularity becomes visible. So I want to estimate the volume of this, of the boundary of this naked region to the future where space-time becomes flat again. So that would correspond to the flat Minkowski slice that you see on the right, the final slice, number 3, in this little picture. So one thing that one can say about this naked region is that it has to be sufficiently big to contain enough bits to encode the correlations that purify the Hawking radiation. And so the number of bits that you would need, the minimum number of bits, would correspond, if I assume that each bit of volume can encode one defect, then the number of bits, or the volume that I need, is essentially the black hole, the initial black hole entropy. I'm looking at the formula in the red frame. So it's essentially the black hole, the original black hole entropy times Planck length cubed, so which scales like m squared times Planck length. So one can estimate length scale of this would-be singularity region as seen for, by future observers when space-time becomes flat again, and the length scale is given by L, the cubic root of this volume. And if you put numbers in, you get something that, of course, is large in Planck units, but is tiny in terms of astrophysical terms. So this is to show that in a very tiny region, if one assumes that one, one can encode information in defects of the space form structure, then one has the potentiality, of course, of a huge potentiality for degrees of freedom. So this length scale gives us something that scales like the mass, the original mass of the black hole over the mass of the sun to the 2/3 times 10 to the minus 11 meters. So the size of this thing will be 10 to the minus 11 meters for a solar mass black hole at the end of evaporation. For a black hole that is evaporating by now, a primordial black hole evaporating by now, this gives 100 of the highest scale that is accessible to us by technological means, 10 to the minus 2 LHC scale. So let's go to the next slide, which essentially shows the same thing. Now we see the Hawking, the Penrose diagram of the situation. The scenario we are proposing, the final state of the system is purified by correlations with underlying Planckian degrees of freedom that are these defects in the space-time form. So let's go to slide number 26. So the gravitational collapse is an irreversible. We have argued that the gravitational collapse is an irreversible process where space-time is highly asymmetric. The firewall argument tells us that purification. So we believe in unitarity of the underlying quantum gravity theory. Firewalls tell us that the purification of, if I start from a pure state, the purification at late times cannot take place during the Hawking era. The purification via effective quantum physics degrees of freedom can also not, does not seem possible, again, for reasons that I should have mentioned before, but we've seen that this huge time asymmetry between the past of the would-be singularity and the future of the would-be singularity, which are expected from energy conservation from infinity, if you try to look at particle production in space-time that has these features, you immediately see, and this is not a theorem, but I believe that one can make this statement more rigorous, one sees that after the black hole, the would-be singularity becomes visible, you would be emitting too much positive energy, too much energy in terms of particles created by this background, if you assume unitarity in the effective quantum field theory sector. So it seems to me that unitarity for the low energy quantum field theory has to be abandoned, on the one hand, because of the firewall argument and also because of this energy conservation issue. The natural possibility, I claim, is this purification via the decoherence with Planckian quantum geometric structure. So this decoherence should be always at play, but of course it becomes really important when you approach the strong curvature regime, namely when you are close to the would-be singularity. But in a strict sense, so because information can be encoded in this underlying Planckian degrees of freedom, as we were saying before, question of Lee, so flat space-time is assumed not to be a very degenerate state, which means that the flat space-time of the initial flat space-time at past null infinity in the picture you see on the right, in the Perrow diagram on the right, that initial flat space-time must be very different from the flat space-time at future null infinity. But the differences are hidden to effective quantum theory degrees of freedom. The differences are encoded in sub-Planckian structure. So let's move on to 27. So here we are saying that loop quantum gravity is not holographic. But I think this is something that should not surprise. So should not surprise anybody in the quantum gravity community. We are saying we are playing with the possibility that degrees of freedom can be encoded in the bulk, so that that degrees of freedom can scale with areas of surfaces. We are saying that the bulk can encode information. But what about all the holographic phenomenology that suggests to some people that this is should be promoted to a principle of quantum gravity, something that tells us the way to go to find this fundamental theory. So from this point of view, one should interpret the quantum gravity, the holographic phenomenology, as just phenomenology of low energy physics. And indeed, everything that I know supports this phenomenology is our calculations that are made in the context of effective field theory on a given background geometry. So everything is done in the context of semiclassics. In particular, there is a recent proof of the Busso bound by Busso, Cassini, and Malvasena. But of course, you have to show bounds that have to do with the amount of entropy flux across certain types of null surfaces, and this turns out to be a fact, something that is a theorem. But you need to give a definition to what you mean by entropy, and in those calculations, what you mean by entropy is always a regularized entropy, where you define the amount of entropy by subtracting the UV divergent part of the von Neumann entropy associated to a state. So you define this entropy relative to some other state. You define the entropy of some state rho by relative to the entropy of the state rho zero, which is typically the vacuum. So in this abstraction, is such that all information about the ultraviolet physics is just gone by definition. So it seems this phenomenology, if they are to stay, is just a fact about quantum field theory and curved space time. Another example of this is Eugenius' computation of changes in black hole entropy. When one perturbs the state and throws something into a black hole, again, one can that calculation shows that the combination of Einstein's equation with quantum field theory and curved space time produce the expected result. But again, this concerns once more low energy phenomenology. The fact that there is no contradiction with between the non-holographic character of quantum gravity, of loop quantum gravity, and these calculations comes in part from the fact that we are able to compute from the microstructure of this basically non-holographic theory the black hole entropy, the absolute value of black hole entropy from statistical mechanical arguments. And once again, I insist that what we are counting in those calculations are this deep Planckian degrees of freedom, which are invisible from the point of view of coarse graining. I want to say that because from the perspective from which we compute black hole entropy in loop quantum gravity, the point of view that Minkowski vacuum should not be a unique state, namely that the Minkowski vacuum should be highly degenerate, which is my main assumption, it should not be surprising. It's just another side of the same coin. So it's the same hypothesis that goes into the calculation of black hole entropy in standard formulations of the quantum gravity. Okay, so let's move on to slide 28. And so very quickly, I want to say that these ideas are not new. I discovered, they have been around for a long time. And in fact, Unruh and Wald in 95 already were proposing the decoherence of effective field theory degrees of freedom with hidden degrees of freedom as a way of understanding the information loss paradox. And more recently, Unruh, in his 2012 paper, The Coherence Without Dissipation, I think I have gone a lot over time, so I want to go quickly over this. But so the point is that one can resolve the information paradox if one assumes that information need not have weight. So, and that's what essentially I am doing. If you want, I am just taking their view and giving a concrete proposal for what this degrees of freedom would be. So we go to slide number 29, and I quickly conclude. Quantum geometry is expected to be atomistic in the non-perturbative quantum gravity. The smooth space-time arises from cross-graining. Discrete Planckian structures explain Hawking entropy. So purification via effective quantum theory degrees of freedom does not seem to work. First, because during the Hawking era, this will lead to the appearance of firewalls. And after the Hawking era, because of if treated on an effective space-time background, because of energy conservation, there is a lot of production of energy, and we only have Planckian mass available for this last period of evaporation. So the natural possibilities of purification via decoherence with Planckian quantum geometry structures, which is very important, close to the Woodley singularity, but should be there in general situations. It seems to me that the firewall argument is really a problem for holographic type of formulations of quantum gravity, such as the ADS, EFT type of scenarios, where one do really, one does really want to have an effective theory formulation at infinity, but it's not a problem at all for an atomistic quantum gravity theory such as quantum gravity. So in this scenario, the Hawking evaporation process is analogous to standard irreversible processes like breaking a glass or burning a newspaper. So go to the next slide. So I think so the fundamental picture is unitary, like burning a newspaper. When I burn a newspaper, I lose the information in the articles, but I know that this loss is just apparent. It's just information gets degraded and gets encoded in correlations between molecules of the hot gas that come out of the burning newspaper. Similarly, in the black hole of the gravitational collapse, information is degraded and goes into, perhaps, into this underlying defect in the space-time structure. So the global picture is unitary, final state is pure, but as seen from the point of view of effective field theory, there is an effective loss of unitarity because of correlations that cannot be recovered with the space-time structure. And the last slide, a little outlook. So one question is, can one take into account the non-perturbative back reaction effect in spherical quantum gravity? There has been great progress in dealing with the spherically symmetric gravitational collapse by Gambini and Pooling. It would be nice, as I argue, semiclassical effects or expectation value of test quantum fields suggest that the symmetry should be broken by vacuum polarization in those scenarios. But that, in order to explore that, one would need to add at least scalar matter to these models. And I know this might be already very, very hard, very complicated, but it seems like one possible avenue for investigation of this time asymmetry of would be singularities. So far, without any scalar matter in those models, it seems to me that results show that one has a completely time-symmetric bound, but as I argue, this seems to be not very compatible with the classics if one takes into account back reaction of vacuum fluctuation. And another question, which seems probably very naive, is if there is an effective decoherence with quantum structure of space-time at Planck's level, then this should have some observational effect, perhaps in cosmology, in structure formation, or unitarity loss in standard quantum field theory. I'm saying that I'm being naive because that is the point that has been raised by Hawking more than 40 years ago, so I don't know how much one can actually do at the moment, but it's true that maybe from this perspective, the nature of the coherence that one has in mind here is quite different, and or at least has a very concrete realization picture. It has to do with its discreteness at the Planck level, and perhaps one can develop phenomenological models when one can explore possible observational features. Let's go to the next slide, and I thank you very much for your attention, and sorry for going all over time.
Questions?
Hi, Alejandro. This is Eugenio. I have a question. Can you go to page 26? My question is about the mass seen from Scrape Plus, from asymptotic infinity. And I imagine if you start with a black hole of a solar mass, up to U0, you have solar mass, then up to U1, you will get Planck mass. Can you describe what happens to the mass after U1?
No, not really. But I'm saying that there is only Planck mass available to be evaporated. So I am saying that from U1 on, or around U1, the total mass of the space-time, the bondy mass of the space-time, should be of the order of the Planck mass. And therefore, the space-time should be very close to Minkowski space-time.
Yes, that's why I'm asking. I'm trying to understand if at late times, way after U2, you are expecting in this scenario still a Bondi mass that is mass Planck, or something that goes to zero so that you would really require that there's a degeneracy of the state with a zero Bondi mass.
So you're asking the question of whether there is a remnant or not.
Exactly. So, is there a non-local remnant or not?
That's a question I cannot really answer from the very little elements, precise elements that we have about the evolution, the dynamical evolution of the black hole when the black hole becomes really quantum. So I would say that this is a possibility, but it's not the only possibility. It could be that the whole of the Bondi mass is radiated off to infinity, and that we end up with a zero mass, so with an exactly Minkowskian space-time for, let's say, for times later than U2.
Okay, comments? Two comments. If the quantum state associated with the ground state is non-unique, one way it could be non-unique that might be the kind of defect you're looking for, was you proposed with Fotini some time ago, is if when there is a particle pair formed out of the vacuum, which are in a totally correlated state, there's a little non-local link between them that stays between them as the particles move apart and local dynamics can't get rid of. So your little defect would be a little link connecting particles B and particle C, which is non-local from a semi-classical point of view.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was going to tell you, you said you had more comments.
Yes.
I can answer the first comment, you can go on.
Go ahead.
I agree. So it seems to me that we when we look at the dynamics, the things we know about quantum dynamics give a lot of room for this the possibility that I am evoking here. So there are these initial solutions of the Hamiltonian constraint that you and Carlo were evoking, like closed loops, for instance, in the weave structure. These kind of things will remain there and be untouched by the Hamiltonian constraint once they are created. These special links that appear in some of the regularizations of the Hamiltonian constraint, or some of these ultra local features of the Hamiltonian constraint that we believe are not perhaps not physical, but maybe these kind of things might remain as a residue in the physical regularization of the Hamiltonian constraint, and this kind of defects can appear and because of the interaction with matter. And might remain later carrying correlations with the Hawking radiations. So all these are things to be explored.
So second comment, if somebody could prove, on the other hand, contrary to this, that the ground state is unique, which actually would be the most conservative option, then let me just point out that the baby universe option still remains and always, to my mind, is in the background as the most conservative solution to these issues.
Yes, but if what I'm saying is correct, then even in that scenario, this could have phenomenological implications. Because what I'm saying is that there is an interest on its own. The possibility that there is a decoherence with Planckian structures is something that has its interest, an interest on its own. So even if in black holes we create a sink of information in the baby universe, this loss of unitarity should be present in other situations and could be testable. So people have been looking for Lorentz-violating effects in quantum gravity. I am saying that another avenue of exploration, which obviously is not new because it's there since Hawking, Hawking's argument, but perhaps what is new is that perhaps in loop quantum gravity there is some calculation that can be done to predict these deviations from unitarity in standard quantum field theory that might be observable or have observable consequences, perhaps in cosmology or even in, one would expect this deviation to be important when curvature is important. So so one could start thinking about what kind of situations are perhaps observable.
The last comment, all of this would be helped if we took on board Penrose's proposal that near singularities quantum gravity is inherently time non-reversible.
I didn't understand. You said that this is all compatible with the view of Penrose about
that near singularities quantum gravity becomes not time reversible but has a fundamental arrow of time.
Yes. But to me here, the arrow of time is present because of the arrow. There is an arrow of time, but the arrow of time is in terms of Penrose's view is due to its special initial conditions.
On to argue that the special initial conditions are a consequence of a fundamental time irreversibility in quantum gravity dynamics.
When one thinks about this in cosmological terms, meaning not an isolated gravitational collapse, then one has to, because entropy here there is a notion of entropy which could be associated to the effective field theoretical degrees of freedom by tracing out these correlations with the quantum degrees of freedom, which is always increasing. And so this selects a direction of time. So one can ask the question, why is it that things are like that at the cosmological level? And I guess one would get confronted with the kind of questions that that lead Penrose to make this postulates. Here, I mean, it's just a trivial consequence of asking that the space-time is initially described by a quantum state that is the vacuum for past observers in prime mind. I thought Penrose was here when I was thinking about these things and when I wrote this paper. And when I told him about this thing, he felt that it was a particular rephrasing of the kind of view that he has, or at least that's what I like to understand from the discussion.
Okay.
Hi, Matteo from BI. How crucial is it that the space-like that the singularity is space-like? In all your thinking and our thinking, it usually is assumed to be space-like, but I understand that in mathematical relativity, people now know that it's not a generic feature of black hole singularity. Rather, they are null rather than space-like. I'm referring to work by La Fermos, for instance.
I don't think this is important. I mean, I don't think it's crucial that this singularity is space-like as I am drawing it in all of my... This would be singularities like a space-like region as I am drawing it in all my diagrams. It's just... So the space-time geometry of this would be singularity is something that has to be understood from the full theory. And perhaps experiments experiments with this symmetry reduced models, like the spherically symmetric models, including matter, spherically symmetric scalar fields, can start telling us something about the space-time geometry of these would-be singularities.
Thank you.
Hi, Alejandro. This is Hal. I had a question for you about the critiques of the time symmetry you were mentioning of the firework model. Carlo and I never intended that it was really symmetric. We always thought that Hawking radiation would adjust this. Is that enough asymmetry?
I'm not sure. So, because it's probably not enough, but I'm not sure. Because in your model, if I understand correctly, the life span of the initial partial regime is scaled like m squared instead of m cubed. So. I don't know. I mean, I don't really know. So the point I wanted to make is precisely that time-symmetric space-times are not compatible with an initial condition, which is the vacuum. Okay? So that's the point. So there should be deviations of your model that make the global picture time asymmetric. And in doing that, your model will resemble more we have more of the general features of what I have been describing. So, in a sense, I'm trying to say that perhaps we're talking about the same type of things once you include this back reaction effect. But a picture that might seem at first intuitive, where a shell collapses and bounces back exactly the same way to infinity, is not compatible with an initial with the test field, which is initially in the vacuum. So it is we've seen that the fact that there is an arrow of time is directly related to the fact that initially the state of the test field is in this special state, which is the vacuum state. So we should expect my argument is just saying that there should be an arrow of time for gravitational collapse, given by these boundary conditions. And so I am saying that there should be modifications of your scenario that would make the space-time look more time asymmetric. So I wanted to show that these things are not completely orthogonal, so that there is that the picture I'm proposing is it's not contradicting yours. It's yours wants the effects